Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 103rd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Naima Abdi Rahman. She was born in Mogadishu, Somalia, at the beginning of their civil war. Her family came to Maine by way of Kenya in 1996 when she was a six-year-old. She attended Portland Public Schools and University of New England and is here today to share some of her reflections about her life and her work. Thank you so much for joining me here today, Naima.
I'm excited to be here.
So you left Somalia when you were five or six. Do you have any memories of your life there at that time?
Very few. One of the things I remember the most is having mangoes when we were younger.
Oh, fresh mangoes.
Fresh mangoes, the ones that weren't quite ripe. And then you would have a spicy dipping sauce with a little salt. And I still remember it. I think it's the taste in the foodie in me, but that's what I remember the most.
I love that. Did you go to market to get those? Or did you have a tree?
Yeah, there was a market. So there was usually little food stands that would be out and about, and also they had them in Kenya as well.
Oh, when you were there mm-hmm. for a short time with your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your family consisted of two girls and two boys, and I picture your mother traveling with four young children across the world to Maine, where your family was reunified with your father again, who had come ahead. Is your mother as amazing as that makes her sound?
She's even more so.
Tell me about your mom.
She's great. She's definitely my role model. She's just a go-getter. Never took no for an answer and always found a way. And I feel like that's the anthem for a lot of new American moms, where they just do what they need to do to take care of their kiddos.
Yeah. So what did she do?
What did she do? At one point, when we first got here, she was working four jobs at one point. I think that was the highest number of jobs she'd be working. She would be getting up early in the morning and delivering newspapers. And then I think she was working with sea urchins. She would go and then do sea urchins after that. And then she would go, she worked in the marina at night in the hotel during the middle afternoon. So she used to do that, and then whatever she would get for tips, she would give it to us, and we would go to the 7-Eleven and go get some snacks and stuff. So, that was a crazy time, but that was her way of trying to make it and out of that relying on the state versus having sufficient amount of money to live, especially without the education background you need to have in this country and then the language. So she just did what she had to do.
Yes, she did. And eventually she ended up with a grocery store too. Is that right?
Yeah, she was, she's a pioneer in that. She was, one of the first halal markets, especially it was woman owned. And, that was about 10 years ago. And she's kind of just, again, being a pioneer and knowing what she had, she used to have a market in Somalia, and that's what was her livelihood. So she took that and what she knew and tried to apply it to the American system, and she's really good at it. Has a lot of business acumen and just kind of was naturally a businesswoman.
I love that. And then you got to grow up seeing your mom as kind of the hub of the community, I would imagine.
Oh, yes. So the halal markets are definitely the hub of Somali culture and of Muslim culture. It just brings people together. And it's a fun and funny place to be.
Why funny?
It's just a lot of characters and people. It's nice. It's a slower process of grocery shopping than the going to a Hannaford or Walmart, where everyone's in their own bubble and going through the list. It's just everyone's sitting there and it starts a dialogue and joking, and it's just it's a good time.
I went into one not too long ago to buy some goat, and I'd never gone to buy goat before, and I really loved it. Yeah. I was such a curiosity to the other shoppers.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you want it cut? I'm like, however you want to cut it.
That's so funny.
Somalis are still a large part of our incoming immigrants in Maine, but you were among the earliest of arrivals. What was that like being part of such a small community when you arrived?
It was intimate, and it was everybody kind of knew each other. It was Portland, somewhat of a big city or big town, but it was a small, such a small community. It was like being a part of a really small town where everybody knew each other, everybody knew each other's business, and it's just. And I grew up in Riverton Park, so that was even smaller. So you had your. You just knew everybody, and it was like a big extended family, and it was pretty neat.
And was it as populated by immigrants then as it is now?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A little less so, I guess. Yeah, a little less so. There were quite a number of Caucasian and American families there. Right now, there is still some, but I think the number of Somali and African has increased, but it's always been diverse. But I think the number of Somali and African families has definitely increased.
I feel like when I drive through there in the summer, it's a lot like driving back in time, back when children played outside with balls and bicycles. And there are just children everywhere having fun and playing games and running and chasing each other. Basketball. It's a fun place to be, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. And it's that basketball, because there wasn't a lot of us didn't, when I was growing up anyways, there wasn't a lot of access to the internet. And then as we grew up, there was, but there was just, the boys love that basketball court, and they're always out there. So that was huge. And there is.
It was their halal market.
It was their halal market. There's just a place to be seen and to see mm-hmm. the very huge social a part of Riverton Park.
Nice. And so where did you worship? Were there enough people to have a quorum at that time?
Oh, yes. There's always been a few, actually. And I think that's another huge community center. It's having a mosque. And it's some of them. There was one right in front of Reiki School. And that's where I used to go when we were younger. And we'd go to Sunday school and stuff for the weekends. Or our version of Sunday school. That's always been there. But now there's, I think, like four different mosques and different, it's kind of like a different following or different branches, depending on the imam. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, choices now.
There's a lot of choices, yeah.
And then did you speak Somali at home? And what was the cultural difference like between inside the home and outside in the community for you as a kid?
There wasn't, I didn't think there was much growing up. I thought it was kind of the same, and we'd be speaking a mix of English and Somali. So there would be one sentence where you went in and out of English and Somali like four times. And it was just, we're just very bilingual in the house. And it was, and my brother till this day will be going in and out, where now I know enough that I could turn purely Somali, and some of the older ones can, but my youngest brother, he has a hard time with the pronunciation and stuff. It's funny, we make fun of him.
He must have been very small when you left Somalia.
Oh yeah, he was one or three. I forgot which. I think he was like 1 or 2 years old. And then what was your other part of your question?
Language and culture. Were there any places where you, maybe the Sunday school variety of, mm-hmm. of your time at your mosque, but are there places where you learned dance or culture or language?
At the house, there would be a lot of videos. There would be like weddings were a huge spectacle, and there would be recordings of the whole event, and there would be like 2 or 3 hour videos and unedited most of the time, or there would be like a little like a picture of the groom and bride at the beginning, and then you'd sit there and you'd watch the whole thing, and it was a huge like event.
Someone was that like a cousin's wedding or something?
Cousin's wedding. There'd be weddings of people we didn't even know, like they're from like Minnesota, or like that's how the communities knew each other. It was through that. It was a lot of videos of weddings, and that was huge. You would have a lot of songs, a lot of dance, One of my aunts used to love listening to Somali CDs when she was she'd be cleaning the house, and that was her thing, and she used to be dancing all the time. So that was a good time.
I love that. I love that image for everybody to gather around and have a celebration non-locally. So how did you think of yourself as you were growing up? Did you think of yourself as a Mainer or an American or a Somali or an African American, or did you have a sense of even
kind of like all of the
noting
above
yourself?
Yeah, I didn't, I don't think it was conscious. I always thought it was both, and I thought I was very Americanized growing up, and all the way up until one of our Anna Alaco and Pios, we were doing prop at Riverton, and they extended us an invitation. Anna did at a camp to go away for a few weeks, and I've never, at that time I was 16, never went away anywhere, and that was just like my little world, and to be a camp counselor as like one of my first jobs. So I go off, and it was Cragan Mountain Farm in New Hampshire, in Freedom, New Hampshire. It's like you could drive through the whole like town in like 10 minutes. It was so tiny. So we went there, and I kind of, that was my reality check that I was an American, I guess, like, or as American as I thought. And like there would be, the food was just so different, because I grew up on like, I knew pizza, I knew McDonald's, I knew like all that like regular stuff, but we had shepherd's pie, and I hate shepherd's pie until this day. I've never had shepherd pie until then, and I was just like, what is this? Can I the food that would be served, I'd just be like, what is this? You expect me to eat this? And then everybody had, there was this one dog that was kind of belonged to one of the members, and that he was my nemesis while I was there. I was just like, I'm not used to having a dog, like we don't culturally have dogs, so he'd be around, and I'd be like in terror mode half the time, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not American. Maybe I'm more Somali than I thought, you know. So that was a funny reality check and a funny time in my life.
And what did you want your mom to cook for you when you got home?
Oh my goodness, I don't remember, but I do remember feasting.
Do you have a favorite family gathering kind of meal that you prepare?
Anything my mom cooks, we'd all eat. Anything she cooks, she's a great cook. My favorite, the lasagna is one of my favorites. She makes this really great lasagna. Sambusa, of course, is one of my favorites. And then her chicken and rice could probably win awards.
Any goat?
I don't particularly care for the goat.
Not a goat fan.
No, not at all. Maybe you'd be.
I like goat.
Yeah.
So you're listening to WMPG, and if you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Naima Abdirahman, and she was originally from Mogadishu, Somalia, and was raised and educated in Portland, Maine. She is now both a full-time pharmacist and a managing member, owner-operator of a learning center called ARWO on Forest Avenue in Portland. So, wow, Naima. Most 20-somethings would be feeling pretty good about themselves just to be done with their education and working as a full-time pharmacist. But yet, you decided to also open a daycare a year ago. And I wonder what it was that made you also want to nurture capable, healthy, and happy children.
Growing up, I had a lot of help. I feel like growing up, I had a lot of help, and that was whether it was through prop, it was through mentors or teachers, and a lot of funding has gone down for that. And I believe that I wanted to be part of that, the community or the people that I respected growing up, and I wanted to be like them. I wanted to emulate them, and again, Pios Ali and Ana Lako and people that my first adult friends, they were people that were in the community service sector and social work. And I think that had a huge impact on me and who I am, and created a love of volunteering and nurturing like the good out of people and having that all coexistence feel. And it's my way of giving back, I believe, while using my creativity and the business side of my personality and my capabilities.
Well, it is a really impressive center. It's beautiful and filled with light and happy people and beautiful children from all over the world.
Thank you.
From all different backgrounds. It's quite a community hub. I think maybe you've made your own halal market.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's a melting pot, and it's the people there are just very, there's an energy, and it's very luring.
Yes, I would agree. I think the part of it I really like is being upstairs.
Yeah.
You have a little view on the world, and it's kind of a safe place for kids. It's like up in a treehouse.
Oh, yeah. I
like that feeling. So Arwo was named after your mother's store, wasn't it?
It was. She wants to start like an Arwo enterprise. So, and for her... Well, Arwo has a beautiful meaning. It means prosperous and plentiful and a gathering place for everybody. And that's like a watering hole where people come to and where you can find anything. That at the beginning when she suggested that that's what I name our daycare center, I was like, no, that sounds ridiculous. No one can pronounce it. But the more I thought about it, it was great. And my brother, it's a family heirloom of names, Arwo. So, and it's nice to have that connection. And I love the meaning behind it.
Yeah, your brother's business is also named Arwo?
Yeah, Arwo Transportation. He does medical transportation. So, yeah, I'm very proud of him.
It's great. I just love that you all share that name together. Mm-hmm. And it's such a beautiful meaning, and it works. It works for your mom's store and for your...
It works for everything.
Yeah. Gosh, I love it. So tell us about the mission and the philosophy of Arwo Learning Center.
Our mission is to create, to help foster a well-rounded child and future citizen of Maine. And we focus on making sure that children are capable, healthy, and that they're happy. And those are the very important to emotional, social, and academic growth. And our philosophy is that inclusion, to coexist, and not just to coexist, but to co-thrive and to learn from each other.
Hmm. That's beautiful. You had said when I was in there the other day that you go to your job as a pharmacist, that's your work, and then it's just kind of fun to go and see the little children and connect and feel the good energy there.
Oh my goodness, yeah. It's like when you're in video game and you're running low on fumes and you go, it's a recharge station, and just kind of go hang out, either whether it's holding a baby or going to try to figure out what a toddler is saying and listen to their face while they're trying to describe something. It's fun.
I thought it was fun reading the signs on the wall where the kids said what they want to be when they grow up. There's the usual doctor, artist, but one kid wants to be a dinosaur when he grows up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. my favorite was police car. I want to be a police car.
Well, his friend wanted to be the policeman.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be a policeman, but I want to be a police car when I grow up.
It could be Arwo Police Department.
Right, that'd be awesome.
So Arwo is at 1037 Forest Avenue. Mm-hmm. It's clean and fresh and bright, and a place to find engaged children from ages 6 weeks to 6 years of age. Mm-hmm. And if people are listening and are interested in learning more about how they could get their kid into Arwo, how should they get in touch with you?
Usually through phone, email, we have our phone number is 207-536-0244. We also have a website, arwochildcare.com, and that has so much information about what we do. And there's a few forms about scheduling a tour or pre-enrolling or just kind of shooting us an email. Always shoot us an email as well at info@arwochildcare.com. And or if you're driving by and want to just take a peek or meet us, we'd be more than happy to say hello.
Yeah, it's down getting close to Morrill's Corner.
Yeah, right across the street from Starbucks.
That's actually a better landmark for people. And it's upstairs. I drove past it. You know, the sign says in this way, and I drove around back and looped back around and found it.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it's fun trying to find it for the first time.
I thought I'd give people a little clue where to look for all the kids looking down at the world. Yeah. So after 1 year in operation, you already employ 16 people and support all kinds of families. You had talked earlier about the diversity there, and it's not just people from different countries, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. It's different from different countries, is different socioeconomic backgrounds, different professional backgrounds. There's different family makeups. There's foster parents. There's parents that are of the same sex. There's parents that are older. There's very young parents, single parents, multi-parent households. There's just it's just beautiful to see how they raise their children. And I think everyone, that all our parents are just amazing. And I try to, like, every time I see them, I'm like blabbing away, how's your day, trying to get information from them. But it's a remarkable group of people and like-minded people, and they all, most of them come to us because of the coexisting and we're like a village of a village trying to raise our children together and to learn from each other. And it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I love that. There's something about daycares that kind of puts everything right in the world.
Yeah.
You know, they're about kindness and including people and teaching people to share and take turns. And boy, if we could keep it that simple.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because we're everyone there is self-conscious because they're role modeling for their children. And it's like, remember to walking feet. And you just, like, it's just indoor voices and be nice. And then it's you say it to the children, and it's a reminder back to yourself on how you should be.
Right, they're looking to you to be the role model.
Mm-hmm. And sure, it's a reminder to yourself. You're like, okay, I should be nice more. Kind words.
It's easy to forget.
Yeah.
Do you have a dream for your learning center in, say, 5 to 10 years? What would you like to have happen there?
I would just want to continue it's what we've started in, having it to be a community center and to keep luring in people that are just beautiful people and beautiful souls, and to make our community full of them. And I hope that it becomes a big part of Portland and the Portland community, and the change in what we want, what we hope for the future, and adding positivity, as much positivity back into Portland and Maine and the world as possible.
That's kind of an unbeatable mission. Our woe for everybody.
Exactly.
Naima, this was really a fun interview. I'm so impressed by you and your learning center. And I was, even before I learned that you also work full-time as a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. You are a person who delights in children and looks to help foster a community of loving, kind, healthy individuals. And thank you for being willing to do that and for being willing to come in today and be on the show with me.
I'm honored to be here. It's wonderful talking with you.
Your mom did a great job with you.
Aw, you're sweet.
Would you be so kind as to introduce the song you've chosen to close today's program with? Naima.
It is I Want to Be Like You on the Jungle Book soundtrack. And it's just a reminder that kids do want to be like us, and that we should be awesome role models, and that eyes and ears are always on us. And we should be wary of that, and to set the best example possible to our kiddos.
Thank you. I love this song. We're going to be singing and dancing along here in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
All right.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you. I want to walk like you, talk like you, chew. You'll see it's true. An ape like me can learn to be human too. Thank you.
you're part of the deal, cuz. Laid a secret on me, a man's red fire.
But I don't know how to make fire.
Now don't try to kid me, man cub. I made a deal with you. What I desire is man's red fire to make my dream come true. Now give me the secret, man cub. Come on, clue me what to do. Give me the power of man's red flower so I can be like you.